Welcome back to Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman, 95.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Nurse Nancy. Our guests today are Amit Schelling, Kendra Nevin, and Liz Welch. In the wake of the June 15 Supreme Court decision that prohibited workplace discrimination against people on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity, we are continuing to talk about LGBT equality. Kendra, I would love to ask you, you appeared on the very first show we ever did talking about your experience being trans under the big sky. But for people who didn't hear that, could you explain a little bit about your own personal journey here in our fair state?
Well, like a lot of trans people, I was aware of feelings I was dealing with from a pretty early age. I was pretty well read, and even though I didn't have the internet back then, this is, you know, 70s, early 80s, I actually was aware that there was such a thing as transgender people. I was aware, well, transsexuals as I knew them back then, and that when I found out about that, that was like a light that came on that, you know, I'm like, really, there's actually something I might be able to do about my situation. But, you know, having grown up in Montana with, you know, my rural peers and the way that they would tease, you know, people they thought to be gay or, you know, a little bit girly or sissies or whatever. And I got some of that teasing. I realized that that was not a road that I had the strength to go down. And also, I didn't want to be a disappointment to my family. They were fairly religious. So it was something that I just kind of tucked away, a part of myself that I decided at an early age could never come out. And so I basically kept it that way, you know, all through, you know, high school and college. And the thought was, it's something that I need to keep hidden the rest of my life and that I should just, you know, suck it up and go about all the other aspects of my life, you know, try to get a career, try to make a family, all those things, and just avoid even thinking about those things. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, you know, what the heck, 80 years? That's not that long. 80 years got to be really, really long. By the time I was pushing 40, I was thinking, this is only halfway over. I can't imagine keeping on like this. It just got to be too much. So luckily for me by that time, you know, it felt like the world had changed enough. It felt a little safer. Mm-hmm. And so that probably gave me the impetus to move forward with transition. And it really did upend my life. There was a lot of fear based on everything I learned growing up here. But it turned out to be, for the most part, not as scary as I had anticipated. I didn't lose as many people as I'd anticipated. And being able to be myself and, you know, be fully realized in every aspect actually made me a person that had more friends, had a bit, you know, more social life. And it really improved my life 1,000%, really, when you think about it. I mean, there's still challenges. There's things that I worry about. I do run into discrimination now and then. Especially on the dating scene, but for the most part, you know, that's been going pretty well. So very surprising, but at the same time, because I was involved in trying to get, you know, secure rights for everybody else, going to the legislature and things like that, and hearing the testimonies, I was confronted with some of the darker side of where I live. And
yeah,
but it always kind of steeled my resolve that, you know, I got to stay in this and I got to work harder and I'm not just going to move away because this is my home. And I want it to remain my home. My family's here, all my friends. In my opinion, it's the most beautiful place in the world to live. So I'm just going to keep working for change.
Well, you went on to do research on mental health of trans people in rural Montana, correct?
Yeah. I got involved with a a little effort called the Rural Transgender Wellness Project. And basically what we set out to do was to learn the determinants of what makes a successful trans person in Montana, or basically in a rural place like Montana. Since we lived in Montana, that was our example. And so I basically interviewed trans people from all over the state of Montana and gathered all this information about, you know, what made it hard for them, what made it good for them, what, you know, how things went with their jobs, how things went with their families, where they were able to find support, where they felt support was lacking. And we just gathered a lot of data, and that data was put into a paper that was published in the Journal of Rural Mental Health. And I've taken that data before the Montana legislature to argue a bit against House Bill 609, which was another bathroom bill. Mm. And because for the first time, we actually had actual local data.
Right.
Every time we went to argue before the legislature before, the argument always was, well, that doesn't really happen here.
Right.
And now we actually had the numbers to back it up. And so, in that respect, I think it might have made a difference. We actually defeated that bill. And I hope that, you know, that information that was gathered will go on to help, you know, further that cause. And also, you know, now because we have those determinants, we can make recommendations to, you know, healthcare providers and lawmakers and educators on how to change things for the better for trans people in a rural state like Montana.
People who want to read that paper in the Journal of Rural Mental Health can look for Determinants of Transgender Individuals' Well-Being, Mental Health, and Suicidality in a Rural State. This is Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. We're talking with Amit Schelling, Kendra Nevin, and Liz Welch about LGBT rights. Amit, listening to Kendra's story, which I find very moving and inspiring, I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your own journey.
Yeah, I think when we look at how just general knowledge about the existence of trans people has really gotten more and more common, just even in the last 5 years. For folks who are, I don't quite call myself old. My kid does a lot, but like not as young for people who are not as young like myself. We think of how being younger and seeing adults and like not having it be this jarring sort of traumatic experience. So for me, the first time that I saw a representation of a story that connected with me, and at this point I had not told anybody, because I was still trying to figure out, like, I don't, like, what's wrong with me? Just to be blunt, that was where I was at. And so it was seeing the movie Boys Don't Cry with Hilary Swank. And, in that hour and a half, 2 hours, feeling that, like, for the first time, your story is being told and you're seeing it. And then you get to the horrific end. Which, you know, I should also say, like, this was based on a true story. And you get to that and you're like, I can never tell anybody about who I am. And I think very much like similar to Kendra of like, I can never, like, this is a secret I have to hold within myself because it is bad. It is like dangerous. And I think like that's real regardless of who the trans person is, whereas you see that, with people who are not as young, whereas like with younger people, they do have like this, access that we never had to the internet, to, all of this other stuff. But on top of it, we have shows like Pose, like blowing up and like really being like enjoyed and consumed by people outside of like the trans and queer community. And, you know, we see Laverne Cox with Disclosure having conversations that like, I don't think we were necessarily aware existed as like a whole community, but often like especially BIPOC trans folks like knew those conversations were happening, but because just in general, unfortunately, like this is what it is, we're like kind of in this next phase where I'm excited because it's not just one population of trans kids that see themselves represented. And even like I'll say, you know, Dwayne Wade's child, Zaya, like coming out and like just seeing like supportive parents in like, you know, a basketball like superstar, and him just being like unapologetically like, this is my kid and like I love my kid and I'm gonna love my kid. I think all of this, you know, representation, it matters so much, but at the same time, like we can't stay stagnant with like, oh good, we checked off boxes, because like, what does it mean to have representation that is actually included in, you know, these stories in the community in a way where we really do have folks being able to like connect with similarities to other people's journeys, even though they're not always similar, they're not always the same. There's always like these similar bonding threads where like, you know, that's where we find our trans family of like that understanding of what this is like, that is just what it is, unspoken or spoken.
Thank you. This is Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman 95.9 FM. We're talking with Emmett Schelling, Kendra Nevin, and Liz Welch about LGBT equality. Emmett, what you just said sounds very hopeful to me, and yet in talking about your own journey, you talked about seeing Boys Don't Cry, which does, in fact, have a horrific and true ending. So I'm going to introduce a bit of a downer here, but we won't end on that. Can you talk about the idea of trans panic?
With trans panic, essentially, you have a situation where violence, even murder has occurred, where the incident is justified in a legal defense, that it's essentially defendable because the victim is trans. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is to me, and it hopefully would be to other folks, a much different story to have somebody coming into your home and, you know, threatening you or like being in a situation where you feel like your life is actually threatened to be able to sort of defend yourself, which is generally like, you know, outside of, you know, mental illness situations, like the only way that we ever see, and even in those situations, we incarcerate mentally ill people. If we're being honest, we don't care. We're not connecting them to help or support. And so in the situations where you have this occur, to literally have a justification that has nothing to do with like somebody being in harm's way of like having to literally defend their life, which is a legal statute that like generally is what you have to meet unless you're trans. And then like, you know, we can use that because the person's trans and like, you know, what kind of message I think is that sending when we're looking at like that we allow that defense as a sanctioned defense within our like judicial system.
Thank you. I'm wondering, given both the progress that has been made, but the challenges that trans people still face, Kendra, could you talk a little bit, because our audience is a Gallatin Valley audience, could you talk about some of the resources here that could be helpful to trans people?
Yeah. Well, first of all, MSU has some groups that are great for transgender support, QSA being one of them, and that would be the Queer Straight Alliance. And we have another group in Bozeman and actually in a few other localities around the state called the Montana Gender Alliance. There's a Bozeman chapter, Billings, Missoula, Helena. Anyway, there's a few chapters. And basically, it's a trans-led group support, basically. They get together, I think, twice a month now, and everybody just talks about, you know, their joys, their sorrows, their everything that, you know, what they might be dealing with on day-to-day life, and they get support from their actual peers. There's always a facilitator that's pretty good at keeping the conversation rolling and directing people towards the support they need, and it's been working out really well. It's pretty well attended. I think since COVID, it's probably kind of, yeah, you know, been on hold for a while, but before that, it was really growing and active, and they would do things like campouts and things like that. So that's a really great resource locally.
Okay. Yeah. Liz, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit. I know you can't predict the future, but for all of us who are supportive of LGBT equality, whether we are gay, trans, straight, whatever, what are some of the challenges that, based on your observation across the states over the years, what are some challenges you expect we might face in Montana, and how can those of us who are involved or want to be involved take action to promote equality?
I think that, you know, some of the things that I'm seeing are that you know, we are going to need to confront these, you know, trans panic defense bills. We're going to need to see, we're going to need to work to eliminate conversion therapy.
Do we have that in Montana?
No.
Okay.
We have conversion therapy, yes.
We do in Montana.
But it's not illegal.
Could you explain what conversion therapy is?
Conversion therapy is usually a faith-based program that usually parents, but it can be older people who've been involved in faith communities, and, you know, their families, their wives, their husbands, there's been conversations about, you know, you can't be gay. And they convince people to either go through a conversion therapy process, or in some cases they can kind of commit them, like to send them to summer camp. Conversion therapy is, personally haven't been through one, but people I've talked to have said it's a very painful experience where you are degraded and basically tried to convert you to not being, you know, LGBTQ. Right. And it uses very much a faith-based approach to it, you know, and it's very dangerous and it messes with a lot of people's heads. And I think, you know, a lot of states are now passing laws that make that illegal, that process illegal.
So that's something we could attempt to do in Montana.
It is something we could attempt to do in Montana. And there are groups like the Trevor Project that, you know, are great people to partner with on that. They've done that work in other states. You know, I think we're going to need to fight these student athlete bills that target predominantly trans women. And some of that is not just fighting the bills, but it's also changing that narrative where, you know, we as allies are affirming that, you know, trans people are who they say they are. Trans women are women, trans men are men, and we need to respect that, and we need to keep having that conversation. I think another avenue where we can do some work that needs it is we're going to need to fight these student athlete bills that target trans athletes. I think that, you know, that's also important that while we're doing that, we're countering the narrative that trans people are not who they say they are. Trans women are women, trans men are men, and we need to make sure that as allies, we are affirming that and not letting that narrative take over. You know, I think based on the Supreme Court case, we're going to see a lot of religious exemption bills. And I think that there's a lot of opportunities to plug in on that and in larger conversations. And I think that's one of the things that I really see as I've, you know, worked across the country, is that there's so much room to have conversations in deeply meaningful ways that aren't just showing up at the legislature. It's, you know, if you work in a place where there's employment issues, or where, you know, you're hiring people, that's about every job in the place. It's one thing to say you can't be discriminated against, but it's another if you can't even get hired.
Right.
So I think, you know, creating spaces where you're in a room, whether it's a boardroom or a store or, you know, a sales space, whatever that is, and looking around and being like, there's someone missing here, and addressing why is this not the case? You know, when someone who is trans or non-binary gets hired, we need to make sure that, you know, people have the opportunity to be promoted. One of the things I keep hearing is, you know, we just need to make sure they have a seat at the table. Well, it's one thing to have a seat at the table. It's another thing to actually have power of decision-making at that table. And I think that it's really important that in our capacity that we are addressing that in our workspaces, in our church spaces, in our, you know, in the PTA, we need to make sure that we're creating space for others to make meaningful decisions that impact themselves and their families. I think that that's really important when it comes to, you know, any kind of representation. And I think that that's something that even people who, you know, are not going to show up at a legislative meeting or who aren't going to do whatever, we need to be ready to plug in those conversations about, you know, who is missing from this conversation. You know, why am I here instead of someone who is trans? Also, you know, also to say, to be the one that corrects some of those misconceptions.
So it sounds like you're saying we can all do something wherever we are. Perhaps we can look around at where we are and see what we can do.
100%.
Thank you. I want to go back. We, Emmett, you spoke a little bit earlier, I think, about that there is more visibility now than there used to be. And Kendra, you talked about how when you were first having these feelings, there was no internet. So now there is the internet. And I know that you have had an awful lot of conversations over the internet and in other ways as a resource person for trans and non-binary people here. What are the kinds of conversations that you have, and what do you want people who are having the feelings that you used to have, what do you tell them, what do you want them to know?
That's a broad subject. One of the most common things that I get when I have somebody reaching out and looking for resources or looking for, you know, just emotional support is family support. So often, if somebody's reaching out to me, they're not getting the family support that I would like to see them be getting, that they really need to. And that's one of the things that, when I did the interviews around the state of trans people, that was one of the things that was the determinant of the most success or the happiest lives for trans people, is if they had the family support, they had a really big leg up on everybody else. And so I guess what I'd really like to say is I would like to speak to the families you know, they need your support. They're your children, they're your brothers and sisters, they're your family, and I really wish that you would think about that and think about them in terms of not necessarily the son you think you have or the daughter you think you have, but the child that you do have, and give them every bit of support that you would give any other child, because they're going to need it. And if they can't find family with you, they're going to find it with us, you know, when they come out to our support meetings, and we're there. So if you're a trans person out there and your family isn't behind you, I will be your family. And I can point you to a lot of other people that will be as well. So that would be the big thing that I'd really want people to take away from this.
That's beautiful. Thank you. I want to thank all our guests, Amit Schelling, Liz Welch, and Kendra Nevin, for talking with us today. This has been Body Politic on KGVM Bozeman, 95.9 FM. You can catch the show at 1 o'clock on the first and third Monday of every month, and most programs can be listened to anytime on the KGVM website at kgvm.org. This is your community radio station.
This is how I learned to sway.